This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy, Joy, Joy. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9 and you're on with myself, Jessie and Carlos. Chatting up with us today now is Dr. Stephen from the Centre Clinic. How are you today, Dr. Stephen?
I'm well, thank you.
Thank you for coming on air with us. Now, we are continuing discussion about treatment as prevention. What exactly does the term treatment as prevention mean when it regards to HIV?
Well, I think it's a term that's really come out of some studies, especially the HPTN-052, which was released in 2011, which showed a dramatic reduction of transmission of HIV when people were on therapy and undetected.
Right.
And there have been some further studies since then that have sort of confirmed the benefits of being on treatment to decrease prevention to uninfected partners.
Of course. So it's mostly referring to treatment when it comes to people living with HIV, doesn't it?
Yeah. So it's one of a growing suite of options that we have for preventing the transmission of HIV. You know, when you use treatment as prevention and combine it with other things like post-exposure prophylaxis, pre-exposure prophylaxis, condoms, and other things, maybe in the future, gels and microbicides.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's one of the tools that we have to actually prevent HIV transmissions.
Yeah, I mean it.
Yeah, so
hopefully we're looking at no transmissions eventually, and you know, a time when we have no HIV or no ongoing transmission of HIV.
Yeah. So, when is the right time for someone living with HIV to start treatment?
Well, when treatment as prevention was first discussed, we weren't sure when the best time to start. So there was a benefit to the community for people to be on treatment. But now there has been just released the results of another trial called the START trial, which had to be stopped early because its outcome was so dramatic that basically everyone benefited. Even at high CD4 counts, everyone benefited in some way by being on treatment. So basically the answer is people should be really going on treatment as soon as is practical for that person.
So with regards to the START study, or, you know, with regards to the information that you know, what kind of benefits is it that you're referring to other than, you know, contributing to reducing transmissions? What exactly are the benefits?
There's a number of different sort of parameters that trial was set up to look at, and basically all the parameters showed benefit. So obviously reduction in AIDS or AIDS-related illnesses showed benefit if you started early. But there was also reductions in non-AIDS events, hospitalizations, deaths of any sort.
Okay. Yeah.
So what kind of questions do you actually receive from your patients in regard to starting treatment, I guess?
Well, I suppose before last year when the START trial was released, then it was a bit more of a difficult discussion, because if you're talking to a person who is HIV infected, to start treatment when they didn't need to, according to the old guidelines, might have been a benefit for partners or the community to decrease transmission. But really now, we can say it's not only good for other people, it's very good for you. And so really that's that's made the discussion a lot easier. But I guess the other difficult question that comes up now is, well, can I completely say that I won't transmit HIV? Is the transmission rate zero when I'm on antivirals? And basically, you can't really say that because, there have been a very small number of transmissions, and even in the studies where there hasn't been any transmissions, there's a statistical uncertainty that, you know, can lead to up to about 4% of transmissions.
And are you talking about a statistical difference not relating to adherence? If people were adhering, 100% correctly, was that 4% still going to be there?
Yeah, adherence is obviously very important, and having regular tests is very important. But even in people who are fully adherent, it's very difficult in medicine to say never,
and
basically from an epidemiological sort of point of view, a statistician can never prove zero. They say it just depends the size of the cohort, the size of the study.
Yeah.
So if you've got a really large study, then your level of certainty that there is no transmission gets closer and closer to zero, but never gets to zero.
Yeah.
But basically, the 4% really is really related to study size.
Yeah, and this is also, what about people who were worried about things like side effects, if they were to start treatment early and they didn't want to? What would you say to those individuals?
I think it's a long and individualized discussion, and, there are small short-term side effects, and there are potential larger long-term side effects. But basically, the sciences and the medicines have got a lot better over time, and so we're lucky and privileged to have pretty good medicines these days that, generally speaking, have very few, if any, short-term side effects. In other words, people don't mind taking them because they don't notice any side effects on a day-to-day basis, and we monitor very carefully for development of any long-term side effects.
So the objective in general of treatment as prevention, of course, is to get a viral load of someone living with HIV or HIV infected, as you said, to have undetectable viral load. Therefore, there's benefits for him as a person, and there's benefits for the community as well. Now, what's the role of other STIs on within this treatment as prevention approach?
There's a theoretical concern that if the recipient, who's maybe the uninfected partner, has, say, rectal gonorrhea, or if the active partner has something like an ulcerative disease like herpes or syphilis, there's a pretty good theoretical reason that you would say that there would be an increased rate of transmission. Interestingly, though, we haven't really had any hard data to back that up. In other words, the studies, the trials that have been looking at that, STI rates and transmissions, haven't found an increased transmission in people who have STIs.
Right, okay. And as far as I'm aware, that's quite a new piece of information to come out, isn't it? Because I know there was warnings that presence of STIs increases the likelihood of transmission, but I think there's new information coming out about that.
Exactly. I mean, we, to some extent, I think all the researchers and doctors were a little bit amazed that what seems like a really sensible, common sense sort of thought that STIs would increase transmission hasn't actually been proven in practice. But these studies are still ongoing, and I think the final sort of release will be next year. So, it's a sort of watch this space at the moment.
Sure. Well, and like you said earlier, this isn't obviously the only answer. It's merely one arm of the whole approach towards reducing HIV transmissions, isn't it?
So yeah, I think you know, it's the more options that we can put out there, and the more options that people can employ, then the greater the decrease, the reduction in the community.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we'll have more about treatment as prevention. Dr. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on and joining us. It's been pleasure speaking to you, and hopefully, you know, people listening have definitely benefited this information. Thanks a lot, and we'll be right back.
Bye.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and joining us now is Colin Bertruni, Director of the HPPC team at Victorian AIDS Council. Hi, Colin, how are you?
I'm good, Jesse, thank you.
Good to know. So we are talking today about the resource that VAC and Living Positive Victoria are working on together soon called Treat HIV Now. What is the idea behind Treat HIV Now?
So basically, we thought that there was a real need at this particular point in time for us to put out a campaign that supports the idea of early treatment for people with HIV. And so in the past, generally people have been able to wait until their CD4 count, which is a measure of their immune system's function, dropped below a certain point before they started therapy. And that was based on pretty good evidence that once the CD4 count gets below 500, gets below 350, that treatment actually confers a benefit. And now we found in research that was published, actually presented last year at a conference on AIDS and retroviruses, that the earlier people start treatment, the better. And the earlier treatment actually confers a benefit on for people living with the virus. And it means that they can avoid serious illnesses further down the track, and particularly AIDS-related cancers. So we thought there was a real need at this particular point in time to put out a campaign that supports the idea of early treatment.
Absolutely.
So, Colin, hey, how are you?
Oh, good, Carlos. How are you?
Good, good. Now, how would you describe treatments nowadays for HIV?
So in the early days of the epidemic, treatments were very, very complex, and there were quite a number of drugs, and some of them were quite toxic in relation to HIV treatment. In the last decade, we've seen a real revolution in antiretroviral treatment. So it's become a whole lot simpler, and the drugs have been a lot more easily tolerated by people living with HIV. So much so that it's possible now to be diagnosed with HIV and be put on a single drug regimen, that's one pill a day, and those drugs are fairly well tolerated. Some people do experience side effects, but they can be managed with the doctor, and usually they're fairly transient.
And of course, these side effects have greatly changed as new treatments have come in, and they're nowhere near as bad as they used to be. Isn't that right?
That's right. There were a group of drugs in the early 90s to mid-90s called the D drugs. That's DDC, D4T, and they were associated with a condition called lipodystrophy or lipoatrophy, mm-hmm. which is basically wasting or the redistribution of fat around the body. Yeah. That was a very serious condition for people living with HIV because it was quite disfiguring. But at the time, a lot of people with HIV had no choice and they had to go on those treatments because there was really nothing else available. But now there is a wide range of drugs available for people, and those drugs are generally avoided.
Indeed. So what may be some of the other reasons that people would choose to delay starting HIV treatment as early as possible?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Jesse. And I think that people might quite reasonably choose to delay treatment because they're simply not ready to start lifelong therapy. And that's the thing about anti-HIV drugs, really, it's a lifelong proposition. And the point we make in the resource, fantastic that Living Positive Victoria have partnered with us on this. They've done a fantastic job in helping us put the content together for the website. We emphasise on the website, on the homepage of the website, that readiness is everything. People's readiness to commit to treatment and to start treatment and be committed to adhere to treatment, to take their treatments as prescribed every day, is the most important thing. And if you're not ready to start treatment, if you feel that you're not ready to start treatment, then you shouldn't commence treatment because you won't be able to adhere to the drugs properly. But there are a number of things that can support people with HIV in relation to being able to take their drugs and manage side effects and so forth. So they've got their treating doctor. We have a peer support program at the Positive Living Centre, which can help people with treatment problems. Also, people can contact Living Positive Victoria as well to talk through those sorts of problems.
Great.
So I think that, the principal thing that might hold people back is they might not feel ready.
Indeed, but regardless, we encourage them to talk to someone anyway, as we've got a lot of support available, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. That's the take-home message.
Okay.
So that website is treathivnow.org.au, correct?
Yep.
Which will be available very soon in the near future.
Yes. We're still ironing out a few little bugs, but we think within the next week or two, it'll be all ready to go.
I know.
And
this
people
is
will start
exciting.
To see ads in the general public probably in June.
Awesome. That's really great. We'll be right back continuing the discussion with Colin Petrucci.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Now, we were discussing treatment as prevention with Colin Petrucci from Victorian AIDS Council. Colin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. So, Colin, earlier we were talking about the benefits of a person living with HIV to go on treatment early. How would you say treatment as prevention reflects in our community's health in general?
So, I guess one of the big findings of the recent past in relation to HIV treatment is that if a person has undetectable viral load once they're on stable antiretroviral treatment, it's very, very difficult for them to transmit HIV to anybody because the virus is in such low levels in their body.
Yeah.
So what that means is what we call the communal viral load, or how much virus is out there in the community, is dramatically reduced. And I guess one of the additional benefits to early treatment is that it holds the potential of having less HIV infections in the future because the viral load is so low.
Indeed. So other than that information, what other information could we find on Treat HIV Now when it does get released?
Okay. So there's a lot of information on the website. Obviously, we talk about the benefits of treatment, both to the individual and, as I just discussed, in terms of the benefits to the community.
Mm.
We talk about the potential treatment concerns that people might have, either side effects or their willingness to kind of go on treatment and start adhering to their treatment. Side effects, there's a section there about side effects. We have frequently asked questions, of course, in relation to treatment. There's a section in there about living with HIV, including a section on stigma, which is obviously still a very, very big problem within the community.
Yeah.
Co-infection with things like hepatitis C, for instance, sex and transmission, disclosure, illicit drug use and medication and how that might interact with medication. We talk a little bit about adherence and also the issue of resistant virus developing if people aren't able to take their drugs on time every time.
Mm.
And it also includes, obviously, a support and referral section. So that's organisational and social support groups for people and clinics and GPs. And those referrals for clinics and GPs are actually national, not just restricted to Victoria.
Yeah, indeed. Well, thanks, Colin, for all that information. Is there any last words that you wanted to say to our listeners with regards to Treat HIV Now or starting treatment early?
Yeah, there is. The one thing that we haven't touched on, which I really wanted to talk about, was the fact that we've had some absolutely fantastic, very brave, openly HIV-positive people who have consented to being depicted in the campaign. And
yeah,
they're going to be on posters on tram, train and bus stops all over Melbourne when the public component of this campaign comes out.
Yeah.
In those depictions, all those people look really well and happy and they're just getting on with their lives. And it actually seeks to demonstrate that an HIV diagnosis is not the end of the world and people are still happy, functional individuals out there in society. And I guess that's a fantastic additional message for the campaign.
Absolutely. Just want to reiterate a massive thank you to all of those people involved. And thank you so much, Colin, for coming on air with us. We really appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks, Jesse. Okay. Thanks, Carlo.
See ya.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Joy 94.9.
Hey, are you going to badminton on Thursday?
Not sure. It depends on work. If not, I might go on Sunday.
Do they have a weekend session as well?
Yes, 2 to 4pm at MSAC.
What's the website?
melbournesmashers.webs.com.
Great, I'll check it out.
Hope to see you there.
Thanks, you too.
Melbourne Smashers is a social badminton club for the Rainbow family. No matter what your skill level, you're invited. To find out more, visit melbournesmashers.webs.com. Joy is proud to share this community service message for the Smashers.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and joining us today is Anthony to be talking about the revisioning group. Anthony, how are you?
Hi, Jesse. I'm good, thanks.
Good. Thank you so much for coming on air with us. So we're here to be talking about the revisioning group. What exactly is that?
So the revisioning program at the Victorian AIDS Council is a men's behaviour change program. It's a group that's designed for same-sex attracted men who have used abusive behaviours in their relationships. Now, that could be towards family members or it can be towards intimate partners. But basically, it's a 12-week program that supports same-sex attracted men to take responsibility for their behaviour and to really stop using violence and, family violence or relationship violence. So, and that's a fairly broad definition. When we talk about violence in intimate relationships, we're talking about not just physical abuse and sexual abuse and property damage and threats to life. Yeah. All of those things are criminal offences, so they're definitely considered violence in family violence. Yeah. But also other behaviours like, swearing and yelling at your partner, making threats to your partner, things like threatening to out your partner or threatening to out their HIV status, any sort of behaviour that leaves your partner feeling intimidated or controlled or coerced or apprehensive.
Yeah, cool. So we're going to come back to that and go through those again, but like that's obviously quite a broad range of different things. What would you say exactly the main purpose and the aim of the revisioning group would be?
So the main purpose is to increase the safety to partners, and if there are children involved, to increase their sense of safety as well. I mean, that's really the main purpose, so that we can ensure that people in our community are living in their relationships and families as safe as possible. And the way we do that is to provide interventions for their partners. So the guys that attend the program, we offer a range of different skills and techniques and some theories and some of the sort of knowledge that we have about effective interventions to address family violence. We offer all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And that work takes a lot of time and process. It's not a quick fix, and that's why it's a 12-week program, because it does take a little bit of time to get these new sort of ways of responding to conflict more embedded.
Yeah. And so obviously this is a very confronting kind of topic, and you might have someone listening thinking, oh, that's not me, I don't do that. But could we kind of maybe listen, and I know you listed a few earlier, what are some of the specific behavioural signs to look out for if considering to be part of this group, if you might not even be sure yourself? Like maybe it's not as obvious as hitting or physically violent. Could you list some of those again?
Yes, and that's a good point, because, I guess people get confused with anger management and men's behaviour change programs. I mean, this is a men's behaviour change program, and sometimes people commit family violence when they're not even angry. So to think of this as something that needs to, a program that addresses your anger is really misleading. So the behaviours that can be used towards a family member or a partner that would be considered relationship violence are, not just things like yelling and swearing and making threats and, even things like going on social media and trying to humiliate your partner or creating restrictions for them to access their social media or to anything that gets in the way of them moving about in their world openly and freely without the fear of consequences, that would be considered relationship or family violence. So it is a broad range of emotions, and I guess it's very different to, I mean, there's regular couple conflict in relationships. You know, so couples argue, couples might use perhaps abusive behaviour like swearing at each other from time to time. But the thing that makes it relationship or family violence is the aspect of fear. The one that's being subjected to these behaviours, if they have an ongoing experience of fear where they start to adjust their behaviour and adjust the way they go about their life to accommodate the other partner, not to trigger them off and not to set them off, it's really setting up an unequal and unfair power dynamic in the relationship. And that's the important aspect, that where we would sort of conclude that that's probably abuse going on in that relationship, and we'd invite the perpetrator to come along to revisioning to do some work on their behaviour.
Yeah.
Anthony, how is the group facilitated or structured?
So there are two facilitators. Hi, Carlos.
Hello.
There are two facilitators in the program, and, you know, these are professionally trained, you know, mental health workers and family violence practitioners, and they work in a very sort of respectful manner. And I guess the structure of the program does involve, it's a group process, so it involves men coming along to talk about their behaviours, their violence with other men, and I guess there's a lot of shame attached to these behaviours. It's not the easiest group to come to talk about something you're not very proud of in front of people you've just met. So it takes an incredibly brave man to come along to this program. But
absolutely.
Also, it's really important that they do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And where can listeners get more information with regards to this?
Yes, so they can check out the VAC website.
Yes. vac.org.au.
That's right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So vac.org.au. And the phone number is 9865 6700, and people can contact me. They can ask to speak to Anthony at the VAC or just to speak to the intake worker, and they will make the appropriate referral. And there's information on the VACVET website. But they, if someone wants to have a conversation with me, if they're not sure about what's going on in their relationship and they just want to explore it a little bit, and just before they make a decision as to whether or not they think they should come to revisioning or not, you know, I'm happy to spend some time to sort of discuss to one or both partners about how we might be able to support them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to ask you one last question for our listeners, which might be the quite obvious slash difficult question to answer. But if we had, you know, listeners listening and thinking they are in an abusive relationship or,
yeah,
you know, but obviously are scared to maybe suggest it to their partner to come along, what kind of advice would you have for them?
Well, it's really hard. I'm not keen on giving hard and fast advice when it comes to these matters, because the individual will know what the best measure of their safety is. So I would say if you are afraid and you are concerned about your immediate physical safety, I'd say call 000. Otherwise, if you're wanting to get some advice around the legal processes and maybe what your rights are, you can speak to your local gay and lesbian liaison officer, and again, you can call the local police station in your area.
Indeed.
I've done some safety planning with people before, people who are at risk of experiencing violence or who are experiencing violence, and I can support, I guess, the VAC counsellors and the family violence program there, we can offer some support around safety planning and how to increase their sense of safety and what sort of things to be mindful of.
Awesome. That's great. So if people wanted more information, they could always just call VAC at 9865 6700 and speak to Anthony. Thank you so much, Anthony, for coming on air with us. We really appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Jess. Thanks, Carlos.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. VAC and ACON are proud to bring you this one-day national conference focusing on health and well-being of lesbian, bisexual and queer women. The Lesbian, Bisexual, Queer Women's Health and Well-Being Conference, Connections, Creativity and Care. This conference will explore best practice and available research in working with LBQ women around mental health, sexual health, alcohol and other drug use, and broader women's health issues. There will be a range of workshops and presentations from industry experts, health and human services providers and community members.
Yes, so we obviously try to aim to make this conference as accessible as possible, and nobody will be turned away due to the lack of funds. So there's two types of registration fees. You've got the wage you're employed, which is $50 per person, or you have the concession or unwaged or student, which will be free. Although there are limited places, regardless, please do get in touch with us. You can get more information by emailing lbqwomen@vac.org.au. So the conference will have two keynote speakers, which is Rowena Allen and Beck Johnson. And following that, there will be a social gathering. This is going to be the end of our show today. It has just absolutely flown by. Carlos, thank you so much for being my co-host.
No worries.
It has been absolutely lovely being with you guys tonight. And we will be right back next Monday from 8 p.m. till 9 p.m. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.